I would like you to turn with me this morning to the book of Job. Job chapter 42. And I would like to read the opening 10 verses of the chapter. The 42nd chapter of the book of Job, commencing to read at verse 1. Let us now hear the word of God. Then Job answered the Lord and said, I know that thou canst do everything, and that no thought can be withholden from thee. Who is he that hideth counsel without knowledge? Therefore have I uttered, that I understood not things too wonderful for me, which I knew not. Hear, I beseech thee, and I will speak. I will demand of thee, and declare thou unto me. I have heard of thee by the hearing of the ear, but now mine eye seeth thee. Wherefore I abhor myself, and repent in dust and ashes. And it was so, that after the Lord had spoken these words unto Job, the Lord said unto Eliphaz the Temanite, My wrath is kindled against thee, and against thy two friends, for ye have not spoken to me the thing that is right, as my servant Job hath. Therefore take unto you now 7 bullocks and 7 rams, and go to my servant Job, and offer up for yourselves a burnt offering, and my servant Job shall pray for you, for him will I accept, lest I deal with you after your folly, and that ye have not spoken of me the thing which is right, like my servant Job. So Eliphaz the Temanite, and Bildad the Shuhite, and Zophar the Naamathite went and did according as the Lord commanded them. The Lord also accepted Job. And the Lord turned the captivity of Job when he prayed for his friends. Also the Lord gave Job twice as much as he had before. And the Lord bless his word to all of our hearts. Now I want you to focus with me, please, for a time on what we have in verse 10. I want to use this as the text for the message. And the Lord turned the captivity of Job when he prayed for his friends. Also the Lord gave Job twice as much as he had before. And the theme of the message is a happy ending. And if you know anything about the beginning of the book of Job, it certainly was anything but happy. But yet the Lord in his grace turned things around, and when we come to the end of the story of Job, it is a happy ending. Most Bible readers avoid the book of Job, with perhaps the exception of the first 2 chapters and then the final chapter that we've read from this morning. And let me just say that these chapters are very dramatic. But the rest of the book appears to be a collection of long speeches, and the conversation never really seems to get anywhere. However, a careful reading of the book, and it would be beneficial for us all to take some time to read through the entire book, and a careful reading of the book will show that it deals with a problem believers have faced from the very beginning of time. Its object is to set forth the trials of an upright man, and Job was certainly an upright man. He was a righteous man. He was a man who had been justified by God's grace. And here in the book that bears his name, the Lord draws back the curtain of this great man's heart and lets us behold the struggle that took place in his soul as he grappled with one of the great universal problems of life, suffering without any known cause. Now James in his book reminds us of Job. In chapter 5 verse 11 of his epistle, he states, "You have heard of the patience of Job. Yes, many people have heard about Job and his trials, but not too many people really understand what those trials were all about and what God was seeking to accomplish in allowing those trials to enter into Job's life. Nor did they realize that Job suffered as he did so that people like you and me today might learn from his experience how to be patient in trials and how to endure to the end. I don't think that Job himself was conscious of the fact that he has been used by God as an object lesson to all generations. So whether he knew about it or whether he was unaware of it, the Lord was using him to instruct all future generations from his life. However, the story does have a happy ending. It ends with the triumph of God's grace in Job's life and is a picture of the ultimate triumph in the lives of all believers. We are going to triumph in the end. It's victory at the end of the journey of life for every child of God. This happy ending, after much suffering, has a very practical lesson to teach each one gathered here in the house of God today. And in our text, the Spirit of God draws our attention to the time in this good man's life and in his experience when the Lord turned again the captivity of Job. What Job had been going through is described here as captivity. And this morning I want to consider with you a few things about this captivity that Job experienced in his life. I think we would do well to pay attention to it, because what happened to Job has happened to so many of God's people down through the years. And if it hasn't happened to you or to me just yet, no doubt it could happen. And so we need to be prepared for such a time. And that's what we want to do for a short time this morning. We want to have a look at this text before us, and we want to think about this captivity and the happy ending in Job's life when he came through his time of testing with flying colours. First of all, we want to think about the extent of Job's captivity. Now, this verse refers to a very dark and a very awful period through which Job had been brought. And the emphasis is upon this. The Lord brought him through this very dark experience in his life. God brought him through. That period had been a time of captivity, or we could say a time of bondage. Now, what is really meant by this term? Well, I think various aspects of this bondage or this captivity can be noted in the opening chapter. When you go back to the opening chapter, you will discover, especially in the concluding verses of the chapter, the extent of Job's trial, the extent of what the man suffered as an individual. So if you turn back to the first chapter, you will discover that he lost everything. He lost all of his possessions. And that was a hard blow for Job, to lose all of his possessions. And that refers to his fortune. And as you read down through these verses, you discover that he had 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 teams of oxen, and 500 female donkeys. He's a very wealthy man. Verse 3 makes that clear. And then we're also told there in verses 13 through 17 the extent of his possessions. Now, the first trial came when the oxen and the donkeys were stolen, and when his farmhands were killed by an enemy, dealt with there in verses 14 and 15. And there came a messenger unto Job and said, the oxen were ploughing and the asses feeding beside them. And then we're told here about the attack made upon them by an enemy. And the enemy took them away, yea, they have slain the servants with the edge of the sword, and I am escaped alone to tell thee. That was the first trial. Then the second trial is dealt with in verse 16. His sheep were taken away, and his herdmen were killed. Look at what it says there in verse 16. While he was yet speaking, this was all happening just one after another. While he was yet speaking, there came also another and said, the fire of God has fallen from heaven and have burned up the sheep and the servants and consumed them, and I only am escaped alone to tell thee. This was a mystery. And then the third trial is dealt with in the next verses. We're told here that the camels were stolen and the servants were killed in a Chaldean raid. So he's lost everything. He's lost all of his possessions. He's lost his wealth. He's lost his substance. He's lost his fortune. That was bad, but it gets worse. Then in verses 18 and 19, we discover what he suffered personally. He had 7 sons and 3 daughters, and he lost his family in one stroke. Can you imagine that? 10 children lost in a moment of time. While he was yet speaking, there came also another and said, "Thy sons and thy daughters were eating and drinking wine in their eldest brother's house, and behold, there came a great wind from the wilderness and smote the 4 corners of the house, and it fell upon the young men, and they are dead, and I only am escaped alone to tell thee." What grief, what heartbreak, what sorrow, what tears flowed that day. And all of these things have happened one after another. There's a build up here. And then in chapter 2, we discover that his wife wasn't much help to him in this time of need. In chapter 2, verses 9 and 10, then said his wife, you would have thought that she would have been there encouraging him. Then said his wife unto him, "Dost thou still retain thine integrity?" What does she advise him to do? Curse God and die. But he said unto her, "Thou speakest as one of the foolish woman speaketh. What? Shall we receive good at the hand of God, and shall we not receive evil?" And all this did not Job sin with his lips. So, at a time when he lost his possessions, at a time when he lost his 10 children, his wife wasn't much good to him. His wife wasn't much of a help to him in his time of grief. And she said, "Curse God." And then, to make matters worse, he suffered in the flesh, according to what we read there in chapter 2, verse 7. "So went Satan forth from the presence of the Lord and smote Job with sore boils from the sole of his foot unto his crown." So from head to foot he was covered in boils, whatever that means. He must have been an awful sight to behold. What pain he must have been in. Some commentators believe that he actually was suffering from leprosy. I can't say for sure. We'll just stick to what it says here, that he was smitten with these boils from his foot unto his crown. Can you imagine what he must have looked like? So he has lost his possessions. He's lost his farm animals. He's lost his servants. He's lost the respect of his wife. He's lost his family. And now he's lost his health. He's a mess to look at. And then, what about his friends? Well, his wife wasn't much help to him. And then his 3 well-known friends, so-called friends, came. And they made false accusations. They made false assumptions about Job. They said that he was being divinely punished for some secret sin. And they too gave him some foolish advice. They attempted to force him to confess for wrongdoings he had not done. And the book deals with this great misconception, namely, that suffering is always caused by personal sin. And these 3 friends came and they made that assumption. Just because you're suffering, God would not allow a righteous man to go through all of these things that you've had to endure. So you must be a great sinner after all. That was far from the truth. Job was actually far more righteous than his 3 friends. He was more righteous than his wife. He was suffering because he was a good man, because he was a righteous man. And that's the reason for his trials. It began with a conversation in heavenly places between God and Satan. And Satan insinuated that Job only worshipped God because of the benefits he received from God, his wealth and his health and his family and everything else. And Satan said, if you remove these things from him, if you take these things away, then Job will surely curse God. God gave the devil permission to remove these things. The Lord allowed it to happen. This is a mystery. But God was going to show to men then, and God was going to teach generations ever since the time of Job, that the faith of a righteous man will prevail. That God's grace will always be available when we go through difficult periods and trials in one's life. The Lord was lifting up Job as an example. And the Lord was saying, I will be with my servant Job, and no matter what he suffers, I will be with him. And when God took away all of these things, this is what this man said at the end of chapter 1. Naked came I out of my mother's womb, and naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave, and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed. Am I hearing right? I've lost 10 children. Blessed be the name of the Lord. I've lost my substance. Blessed be the name of the Lord. I've lost my servants. Blessed be the name of the Lord. How could he say that? What kind of man was he? He's just been a man of God who proved God in his time of need. Then Job arose and rent his mantle and shaved his head. That's a token of sorrow, and his heart was breaking. He fell down upon the ground and worshipped. Where did all this bring him to? It brought him to the feet of his Maker. It brought him into the presence of God, and he worshipped God. And he said, blessed be the name of the Lord. Is this the action of a carnal man? Or are these the deeds of a man who has sinned greatly against God? I don't think so. I think this is the proof that this was a good man. This was a godly man. This was a righteous man. And he's suffering because he is a righteous man. This is really one of the most amazing scriptures in the Bible, as far as I'm concerned. God allowed Satan to test Job. So ultimately, it was God who allowed everything to be taken away from Job. He lost his children to death. He lost his wealth. He lost his livestock. He lost his servants. His reputation was ruined. He lost the loyalty of his wife. This man's going through the mill. This man's going through the grinder. He finally lost his health. And he almost lost his mind. I don't think that we can really enter into what this man suffered. Some of us have come through difficult times, but I don't think we've ever suffered anything like this. And then to add insult to injury, his so-called friends wrongly condemned him, alleging that he must be guilty of something. For why else would God bring such evils or allow such evils to come upon him? They suggested that his children had sinned, bringing judgment and death upon themselves. Actually, Job was allowed to suffer to accomplish several things, and you've got to read through the book itself to discover why he suffered. The Lord allowed him to suffer that Satan might be silenced, that Job might see God as he really is, that he might see himself as he really was, and that he might learn to pray. For rather than to lash out at his critics, what did he do? Well, we're told what he did. He prayed for his friends. And he was allowed to go through all this to show that God remained in complete control of every situation. God was aware of everything. God permitted everything to come into Job's life. And God permitted this for a purpose, for a reason. To magnify his grace through the life of Job. To magnify his grace through the suffering in the life of Job. You have heard of the patience of Job, says James. So God was magnified through everything that took place in Job's life. However, the captivity had more to it than what I have already mentioned. I feel that there's also a reference here to spiritual captivity. And that brings me then to the evidence of Job's captivity. We're told here that the Lord turned the captivity of Job. And that word turned simply means to bring back. And it is used in a number of other places with regards to people being brought out of spiritual captivity and spiritual bondage. For example, it is used in Psalm 14 verse 7 where it's referring to the salvation of Israel. And the psalmist writes there of how the Lord bringeth back the captivity of his people. And it is speaking there of spiritual restoration. And the same word is also found in Psalm 53 verse 6. And Psalm 85 verse 1. And Psalm 85, thou hast brought back the captivity of Jacob. It's referring there to restoration from spiritual backsliding. And obviously, in these three Psalms, we have the same word and the same idea. The same thing has been expressed. The same thing has been dealt with. It's referring to spiritual bondage. So Job got into a period of spiritual bondage when he entered into this period of great affliction by the permission of the Lord. Darkness descended over his soul. He felt forsaken of the Lord. He fell into a season of spiritual captivity. It was bondage and prayer. That is especially in view in verse 10. Because it was when he prayed for his friends that the Lord turned again his captivity. So this good man has suffered a lot. But he's only a man. He's feet of clay. He's just like the rest of us gathered here in the house of God. He has praised the Lord. He's given God thanks for his grace and his goodness and his mercy. Though he slay me, yet will I trust him. But he's only a man. And when you read through the book, you discover that great darkness descended over his soul. And he felt that God had forsaken him. And I believe that it refers especially to his prayer life. The turning took place when he prayed for his friends. So there's certainly evidence here of spiritual bondage in his life. Now let me just take you to chapter 23 of his book for a moment. Chapter 23. I trust you'll link these verses up at some future time yourself. Let me just read to you the first four verses of this chapter. Then Job answered and said, even today is my complaint bitter. My stroke is heavier than my groaning. Oh, that I knew where I might find him, that I might come even to his seat. I would order my cause before him and fill my mouth with arguments. So, in the context of these verses, Job is talking about prayer. And it would indicate to us that he was in bondage in prayer, that he had lost touch with God. He doesn't know where to find him. Oh, that I might know where to find him. What does he want to find him for? He wants to plead his cause before God. He wants relief. He wants help. Why does he want help? Because he's suffering spiritually. He's in spiritual bondage. And he says here at the end of verse 3, oh, that I knew where I might find him, so I can't find the Lord, that I might come even to his seat. There may be a reference here to a mercy seat. Or there may be reference here to God's throne. He didn't know where to find the mercy seat. He didn't know where to find God. Such was his confusion. Such was his darkness at this point of time. He wanted to come to the throne of God and the throne of grace, but he couldn't get there. He was trying. But no matter how hard he tried, he couldn't find God's seat. He couldn't find the Lord. He was trying to get through to God, but it seems as if the heavens appeared to him to be as brass. Have you ever experienced that? You've bowed on your knees for prayer. You've tried to pray, but you just couldn't pray. And no matter how well intentioned you were, you just couldn't get through to heaven. You couldn't find God in your time of need. You can sympathize with Job then. Think about what he's lost, what he's come through, what he's suffered. There seemed to be a barrier. The language suggests captivity in prayer. He just couldn't get through to God. Have you been able to get through to God recently? Have you been able to lay your hand upon God in prayer recently? Or maybe it's been a struggle. Maybe it's been hard. So many things have come in. So many pressures have weighed you down. There's a dark cloud over you today. It doesn't matter how hard you try. You still can't get through. You can't find the mercy seat. You'd love to get there. There's so many things you want to tell the Lord. There's so many things you've got to unburden before the throne of grace. So many things there. You just can't seem to get there. This is the language of a man who is suffering spiritual bondage. It seems as if heaven is closed. He just couldn't get through to God. Then if you move on to chapter 29, notice what he says here in verse 2. Oh, that I wear as in months past, as in the days when God preserved me or watched over me, when his candle or his lamp or his light shined upon my head, and when by his light I walked through darkness. So when God was blessing Job, when his hand was upon him, God was watching over him, God preserved him, God's lamp was before him, he was walking in the light. And when God's candle or lamp shone upon him, there was nothing to fear. He was able to walk through the darkness. Verse 4, as I was in the days of my youth, when the secret of God was upon my tabernacle or upon my tent, upon my life. The language is the language of a man who had been highly favored of God. He's looking back to what it used to be like. He looked back to times of blessing, times of walking with the Lord, times of knowing days at the right hand of God. But now he's down in the very depths of despair, at the point where he believes that God has forsaken him. He talked about times when God preserved him, when God's candle shone upon his head. Verse 5, when the Almighty was yet with me, when my children were about me. He remembered those days. He remembered when they had the family around his knees, when he offered a sacrifice in their behalf. Days of gladness, days of happiness. Days when he heard the children laugh as they grew up. Days when God blessed him mightily. And when he was walking in the light, he feared nothing, didn't fear the darkness. Times past, months, recent times, when he experienced the blessing of God. But now, that's all changed. The devil has many ways to bring us into bondage. Many ways to get us down. Many ways to ensnare us. He looked back and he rejoiced. But now, he looked around. Everything was gone. His family was gone. His wife has let him down. His friends are no good to him now. And he looks at his body from head to toe. What good am I? Maybe my friends were right. Maybe I am a great sinner. Satan had manipulated all the circumstances in such a way as to leave Job feeling this way, despondent, discouraged, depressed, let down. Here's evidence of a spiritual captivity. And then the end of Job's captivity. Look at the text again. And the Lord turned the captivity of Job when he prayed for his friends. Also the Lord gave Job twice as much as he had before. The Lord turned his captivity. The Lord brought him out of the darkness. The Lord brought him out of his despair. The Lord came and lifted him up. The Lord did it. He turned the captivity on the basis of the shed blood. How do I know that? Well, look at what it says there in verse 8. Therefore take unto you now 7 bullocks, the perfect number, and 7 rams, and go to my servant Job, and offer up for yourselves a burnt offering. There's the shedding of the blood. And my servant Job shall pray for you. And in verse 9 we're told of how the Lord accepted Job, and how the friends of Job were accepted through Job. And the reference to captivity being turned is preceded by the words accepted in verse 8. The Lord accepted Job in connection with the sacrifice. And it's a picture of Christ. The other three sinned against the Lord, and the Lord made that clear to them. You haven't spoke to me the right thing as my servant Job has spoken to me. And so the Lord was actually saying to Eliphaz and to the others, I'm not going to hear you. I'm not going to accept you. But he did tell them to bring the appointed sacrifice to Job. And Job wants to offer those sacrifices. Go to him. He will offer the sacrifice. Then the blood was shed. And then, upon the basis of the shed blood, he will forgive you. It's a picture of Christ. Christ is here. God accepted the three friends for the sake of Job. And in this, Job is a type of Christ. God accepted Job, and God accepted Christ as our sacrifice. And because he was accepted, God also accepted the other three who had sinned against Job, and at the same time who had sinned against God. They were accepted through Job. We are accepted through Christ and the shedding of his blood for us on Calvary's cross. However, taking Job as a believer, we have a type of a believer in bondage and prayer. It's important to see this. and Job was accepted, and his bondage was turned again against the background of a sacrifice being offered and blood being shed. So if we can't get through to God in prayer, if there's a cloud between us and the God of heaven, if the heavens are as brass, then there is an answer. There's a way back. It's the shed blood of Christ. It's getting again to Calvary. It's getting again to the cross. It's being accepted in the well-beloved. It's drawing near to God through his blood, through his sacrifice, through the intercession of Christ, through his merit. When Christ came, he came to his own. His own misunderstood him. They criticized him, just the way Job's three friends criticized him. They called him a servant of Belial, doing the devil's work. And then they crucified him, and his blood was shed. And that was God's remedy for sin. That was God's way to reconcile the people that Christ came to save from their sin. And thank God, when he died and shed his blood, and when he was raised on the third day, God testified, I have accepted Christ as a sacrifice for sin. And I accept all those who come to me through Christ, through his blood. And when we do, that puts us on a right standing with God. So Job is now brought back to praying ground. He's brought back to praying ground through the shedding of the blood. And then he confesses in verses 5 and 6, I have heard of thee by the hearing of the ear, but now mine eye seeth thee. I have seen thee in all of my troubles. I have seen the hand of God in everything that has happened in my life. Wherefore I abhor myself and repent in dust and ashes. Lord, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I doubted thee. I'm sorry I had these thoughts. I'm sorry I allowed myself to get into this state. I'm sorry I abhor myself. I repent in sackcloth and ashes. He's coming to God through faith in the shed blood. He's drawing nigh to God through Christ. He confesses his sin. Lord, I've sinned. What was I thinking about? He's in praying ground. He's right with God again. There's an end to his captivity. In chapter 1, he's seen praying for his family. However, during that time, the time of his captivity, he had not been praying for anybody. He had not been praying even for himself. Maybe this past week that has gone into eternity, you haven't prayed for anybody else. You haven't prayed even for yourself. The darkness has been so intense. The pressure has been so real. And the devil knows how to heat the furnace of affliction. And you haven't been praying. And the Lord has brought you here to the house of God this day to hear this message that there's an end. There's an end to it all. It's the blood of the atoning Lamb of Calvary. It's the atoning work of Christ. It's the blood of the Lamb. It's his work wrought for us. And by his grace he can bring you out of your spiritual bondage. How do I know that he's out of spiritual bondage now? Well, during the time of captivity, he hasn't prayed for anybody else. He hasn't prayed even for himself. He hasn't mentioned his wife. But now he's praying for these three people, these so-called friends of his. He's praying for them. Here's a change. He can pray for others now. He has been forgiven himself. He has been restored. He's been blessed of God. And now he's praying for others. After Job had suffered, he received twice as much. The end of verse 10. And the Lord turned the captivity of Job when he prayed for his friends. Also the Lord gave Job twice as much as he had before. And you can read here for yourself in the following verses. Twice as many herds. The herds were doubled. Verse 12. And when God ended Job's captivity, he gave him a new family. Exactly what he had at the beginning. Now you think that the Lord would have given him 14 sons and 6 daughters if we're going to double everything up. Everything else was doubled, but the Lord instead gave him 7 sons and 3 daughters. What he had initially. So that shows us that he had twice the family he had. This is God's way of showing Job that his first family had not perished spiritually. Though they had died physically. They were dead, but they were with the Lord. And what makes me say that? They were not dead spiritually. They were alive in that sense. Because in chapter 1, verse 5, Job had prayed for his family. Does not mean that they had done what the three friends accused them of doing. Job was a very careful man. He had earnestly prayed for his children. He had acted on their behalf as their priest. He had offered up sacrifices for them in that opening chapter, verse 5. He had pleaded with God for them. So in this way, God was saying that the original family of 7 sons and 3 daughters were in heaven, and that the Lord gave him a new family who were still on earth at the time. He had acted as their priest. He had prayed for them. He had offered a sacrifice on their behalf, and God had accepted them through that sacrifice. He had a family on earth and in heaven simultaneously. So he ended up having twice the number of children he had. His former health was recovered, allowing him to live for another 140 years. His friends admitted the error of their ways. They asked his forgiveness. They all came, family and friends. Some gave him pieces of money, other things. In verse 12, we read these words. So the Lord blessed the latter end of Job more than his beginning. For he had 14,000 sheep, 6,000 camels, 1,000 yoke of oxen, and 1,000 she asses. He had also 7 sons and 3 daughters. God doubled it up. God is no man's debtor. So God allowed Job to go through this. He allowed him to lose all of these things to teach you and to teach me a lesson of how to triumph in times of trial. How to succeed in times of trial. In times of trial we falter, we fail. That is something that's always been the case. We're just men and women. But God honours those who trust him. And Job trusted in the Lord. Though he slay me, yet will I trust him. And the Lord turned the captivity of Job. When he prayed for his friends, also the Lord gave Job twice as much as he had before. May the Lord bless his word. Let's bow for prayer.